Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 23rd day of January, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's talk for the next few minutes about what's going on around the nation and around the world, starting with the world, and in particular, World War III, which seems to have taken, at minimum, a couple of baby steps forward over the last few days. Tensions between Iran and Israel are escalating and intensifying, says a piece from The Express out of the UK, after Israel struck Iranian targets earlier this week, said a former Pentagon official. Michael Maloof warned that the situation between the two states is getting, quote, quickly out of hand due to intensified Israeli attacks, especially rocket attacks in the Syrian theater. Speaking to RT America, he said all of this indicates a very rapid escalation is occurring, and that Netanyahu himself basically stated it's only going to intensify. Said Maloof, I think this is a prelude to something even more serious in terms of probably creating an even greater uncertainty and conflict within the region itself, especially given the Russian and Iranian presence. And he added it can happen very rapidly. Next, an interesting tidbit from an entirely different area, in fact, an entirely different planetoid. A meteor hit the moon during the total lunar eclipse. And here's at National Geographic is what we know so far. On January 20th, viewers across the Western Hemisphere were treated to the rusty hues of what is now being called the decade's last blood moon eclipse. Briefly, folks, what we saw was a total lunar eclipse. This blood moon thing really does sound like something more out of pagan Transylvania than a description of an event most of us have seen many times in our lives. Well, says the story, as the event unfolded, some lucky observers caught an unexpected delight, a flash of space rock striking the lunar orb. Said Justin Cowart, a PhD candidate at Stony Brook University in New York, it's a rare alignment of infrequent events, because a meteoroid about this size hits the moon every week or so. But if this event is confirmed, it may be the first time such an impact has been recorded during a total lunar eclipse. It was first spotted by an eagle-eyed viewer on Reddit, who reached out to the r/space community to see if others could weigh in or had recorded it. The news then spread quickly on social media as people from across the path of totality posted their image and video of this tiny flicker of light. There was the usual scientific skepticism, because flashes of light from an impact are faint and short-lived and might be easy to confuse with an errant pixel, but image after image showed the same thing. At 4:41 Universal Time, right at the beginning of totality, a tiny speck of light glinted south of the crater Birgius, a nearly 55-mile-wide pockmark on the western part of the moon, and it was shown on any number of photos. So now that it's been confirmed, the effort shifts towards trying to locate the new crater on the already pockmarked surface of the moon. On next to unbridled stupidity in government. Yeah, I know there's a lot of this, but there seem to be a whole line of people looking to see if they can't displace Mad Maxine Waters, who's really more of a nutcase than an idiot, although her credentials there are pretty solid. But especially lately, the economically, politically, and even civics 101 utterly illiterate Alexandria Occasional Cortex. The poster girl for ignorance on parade, not long ago she proved she didn't even know what the three branches of government were. But now, I are one, seems to be her motto. Most famously, lately, she one-upped Al Gore, proclaiming that the world will end in 12 years due to non-existent man-made global warming. She doesn't know what anthropogenic means, though, much less whether the sun might have something to do with it. But your host can't help to note the coincidence. That's exactly how long it takes to dumb down a new generation in the public indoctrination cesspools. For those that still have a mind, it boggles at the implications. Meanwhile, though, the most recent candidate for top of the ignorance heap is a socialist from Vermont named Peter Welch, who tweeted Tuesday, quote, "Never in the history of this country has it been legal to make people work for free. But that's what's happening to federal employees. This can never happen again." Unquote. And at least a few socialists even pointed out to this guy, ever heard of something called slavery? Whereupon, to quote Emily Litella, for those of you who can still remember when Saturday Night Live was once funny, never mind. Well, never except for slavery, said the Congress traitor socialist. The irony here, of course, is that socialists always want to make people into slaves and basically work for free, except for those who don't work at all. And this guy is still ignoring modern American slavery. If you've ever heard of Tax Freedom Day, you note that in order to support these generally unconstitutional anyway, federal, workers, Some work, of course, it's just that the 90% give them a bad name. The average American slave has to work without pay through the middle of April, according to various Tax Freedom Day calculations. So let's hear this wonderful tweet again from Representative Sick Peter Welch. Never in the history of this country has it been legal to make people work for free. But that's what's happening to federal employees. No, folks, some federal employees having to, quote, work for free is nothing compared to the huge number of Americans who work for free to support them. From there we go to the Speaker of the Congress Traitors. Not pretty well exposed for her latest idiot political trick. I would say it was a stupid move, since I've argued for years that you have to look at these politicos and ask, are they really this stupid, or are they just evil? But increasingly, I think the answer is leaning more and more towards the obvious latter there. But I do have an update on the State of the Union message. The White House, says Fox, is still planning to move ahead with next week's scheduled State of the Union address, but the details remain up in the air after House Speaker Traitor Nancy Pelosi's latest stupid political stunt. But according to Fox, via multiple sources, it remains unclear whether the address scheduled for January 29th will in fact go forward or what venue it would be in. The White House is even planning for the possibility of a speech somewhere outside Washington. And no doubt, wherever they hold it, if the public is allowed in, that'll be a major event. Said one senior source, we're still in a holding pattern. But Fox has learned, they say, that the White House sent a letter to the House Sergeant at Arms to schedule a walkthrough for next week's planned address, which came after the walkthrough once scheduled for last week was canceled by the House stunt coordinator. For the moment, though, the president still intends to be at the Capitol next Tuesday to deliver the speech on schedule. So the White House is preparing two tracks for next week's speech. The preferred one is an address, as per custom, at the Capitol, perhaps even if it has to be in the Senate chambers, and the second is a backup plan for a speech somewhere outside of the District of Criminals. White House Deputy Press Secretary Hogan Gidley suggested the president could move the speech if Pelosi continues to block it in the House, but he did say, I'm not going to get ahead of anything he would announce, because obviously Pelosi is, quote, trying to play politics with that venue. And when it came to the absolutely ludicrous suggestion that, oh, security is the reason why Pelosi wants to play politics, he said, quote, if the Secret Service can protect the President of the United States on a trip to Iraq, chances are they can protect the American president in the halls of Congress, unquote. Although some of us will admit that the average Congress traitor is now a lot more dangerous than perhaps the average Chinese communist or even Afghan terrorist. In any case, folks, it's probably a good bet to expect something come next Tuesday. Also from Washington, the Supreme Court has agreed to take up the biggest gun rights case in a decade. With a review of a New York City so-called law, we know, of course, that since it's in violation of the Constitution, it's truly no law at all, but the question is whether the Supreme Court has ever read that. Anyway, the so-called law in New York City alleges to stop handgun owners, sick, from even so much as moving their weapons. It's the first time since 2010 that the court has taken up a major gun rights case. We kind of have a pretty good idea why. And it'll review what are called premises licenses. Yeah, you can't even keep, much less bear, in the Big Apple, without one. And these permit licenses prohibit the slaves from actually even transporting their firearms outside of what they thought was their own home, too. Three gun owners and the New York State National Rifle Association affiliate claim the law breaches the Second Amendment, gee, do you think, and is draconian, and the ruling could come as late as 2020, as nine justices, or however many are still alive, set out some of the cases they'll hear between October of this year and June of next. And in case you haven't heard about this particular New York City infringement on what was once called a right, the plaintiffs say the city's rules forbid them from taking their guns to shooting ranges or even to other homes, whether they own them or not, outside the city limits. Good grief. And you think it actually takes a black robe-wearing high priest of some other god to decide that shall not be infringed is clearly being infringed here? Oh, and let's not confuse premises licenses with carry licenses, and who knows how many other kinds of license they have. It's one thing for a peon even to get permission to possess a weapon, much less to carry it outside the premises. I guess for that you have to either work for CNN, the mayor's office, or the NYPD. And I guess it is interesting that the court has at least, now that it has some Trump appointees, decided to look again at firearms-related issues. For the first time in about 9 years, they've studiously avoided taking up any other major firearms cases under the Obama regime, despite repeated requests from those being infringed, having left in place assault weapons bans in New York, Connecticut, and Maryland, not to mention most recently the felonious confiscation in New Jersey, as well as laws over gun waiting periods and concealed carry permits in the People's Republic of California. Oh, and I note that the Daily Mail summary here doesn't even mention the Soviet-style red flag confiscation orders. Obviously unconstitutional, whether the Supreme Court turns a blind eye to the whole concept or not. From there, we turn to the waste stream of fake news, which just seems to get worse and worse, and more obviously just completely out there in far left field. Let's start with this piece from Caitlin Johnstone that says, "The waste stream media begs for trust." Yeah, you heard that right. After the latest debacle, which one you may be wondering? Well, she's talking about BuzzFeed in particular. It says, following what the WAPO has described as, quote, "the highest profile misstep yet," well, that was last week, "for a news organization during a period of heightened and intense scrutiny of what now passes for the press, mass media representatives are now flailing desperately as they attempt to argue why people should continue to place their trust in these inveterate waste stream liars, a.k.a. news outlets. Last Thursday, BuzzFeed News delivered the latest Russia, Russia, Russia bombshell to fizzle within just 24 hours of its publication. A pattern, she writes, is now so consistent, I've personally made a practice of declining to comment on such stories until a day or two after their release. This, of course, was a story that was so heinously bad, even the Mueller witch hunt ended up disavowing it, which may, of course, have been part of the plan all along. She notes that the print version of the New York Times covered the BuzzFeed report on its front page when the story broke, but the retraction and subsequent Mueller correction the next day was shoved back to page 11. This, she said, is not only journalistic malpractice, but for some other reasons as well, downright galling. All right, well, there's a whole lot more on that score, but basically she says there was reason enough already for any reasonable person to refrain from frenzied celebration. All right, she rehashes the story, I'm not gonna, but basically I do like this summary. This, she writes, is the behavior of a media class that's interested in selling narratives, not reporting truth. And yet, the mass media talking heads are still telling us today that we must continue to trust them. Hey, have we ever lied to you? Well, in the last 2.5 seconds, said NBC's Chuck Todd in a tweet, "Those trying to tar all media today." No, we're not trying to tar all of you, Chuck, just the demonstrated multiple prevaricators. Anyway, they're not interested, he says, in improving journalism. No, folks, we know what's journalism and what's not. But protecting themselves, he said. There's a lot more accountability in media these days than in our politics. Oh, really? Boy, that's a really nasty comparison, isn't it? Well, folks, for my own part, I'd really far rather trust the average used car salesman, even if I can see the thing sitting there in a smoking heap. Says Caitlin Johnstone, more accountability in media than in politics, Chuck? Really? Accountability to whom? Mass media doesn't even have public elections. Well, of course, we don't even have honest public elections anymore in America with a K. Now, Caitlin Johnstone, who is no Trump fan, actually concludes this way. The mainstream media absolutely is the enemy of the people. Just because Trump says it doesn't mean it's not true. And the sooner people wake up from the perverse narrative matrix of the plutocratic media, the better. From investigative reporter Jack Cashill via the American Thinker concerning the other big media flap and revelation of prevarication. He calls it what the right should learn from the Covington Catholic flap. The first question he begins any conservative should have asked himself about a picture of a high school kid supposedly harassing an old Indian guy beating a drum was, why is this image newsworthy? The image, he continues, was newsworthy because the left said it was. They shaped the news. High school kids harass their elders on a daily basis. Even if the Covington kid was guilty as accused, other kids throughout America were doing far worse things to old people during this same news cycle. Mugging them, punching them. Hey, anybody remember the knockout game? And, of course, even killing them. And even if they were caught on video, which happens frequently, the media wouldn't show those incidents unless the left found them politically useful. They almost never are, and so they almost never do. And ultimately, this isn't new. It's just that it's gone completely over the top. He points out that even the so-called right has gone off the deep end when it comes to coverage and political correctness. For example, writes Castro, the National Review's coverage of the Covington flap mirrors its treatment of the Trump presidency. Its editors, like those at the erstwhile Weekly Standard, have been playing by the left's rules since the National Review denounced the John Birch Society nearly 60 years ago, said one editor way back then. At the time, by way of explanation, quote, we can't afford to jeopardize the grudging status we've earned in the liberal community, unquote. And when grudging status with the left matters more than the truth, folks, you can kind of see why we are where we are. From there, we go on to another guy that I find less and less respect for, as he too seems to have moved more and more in the direction of seeking liberal acceptance. Former Judge Andrew Napolitano, and now Fox News senior judicial analyst, who accused, and got this one right, the FBI of using unconstitutional means to obtain information against the newly elected President Donald Trump when he was on Fox and Friends on Tuesday. He said, one warrant is easy to get, and one is difficult to get. So when the FBI can't get the more difficult one, they get the easy one. And he added, that has corrupted them, and that has enabled them to gather evidence by unconstitutional means, and that's what they did to the president, unquote. Which prompted even the real Donald J. Trump to quote the man, and observe in a tweet that he was referring to the, quote, Clinton campaign's fake and unverified dossier, which is illegal. Said Napolitano, the president has argued that FISA, which has a low standard to get a search warrant, has been abused by the FBI because it's easy to get a search warrant from a FISA court as opposed to a regular sitting federal judge where the standard is one of the Constitution. Under the Constitution, to get a search warrant, to listen to somebody's phone calls, to look at their mail, to follow them, you have to have probable cause of a crime, a very high standard. You have to show evidence, not a dossier, but actual evidence to a judge. He went on to say there's a political agenda within the FBI, gee, do you think, and claimed that certain agents clearly want to see the president and this White House fail. Quote, it's obvious that there was an agenda on the part of the people in the FBI to either cause President Trump to stumble, to prevent him from entering office, or to get rid of him once he was in office. We keep getting snippets of this evidence. If they can do this, he continued, to the President of the United States, they can do it to anybody, unquote. And I guess that, too, is increasingly obvious. There's this, too, a lamentation from a site called Liberty Nation about the fact that while Nancy Pelosi, the speaker for the traitors, may have thought she was clever when she sent the president a letter stating that the State of the Union address needed to be canceled because she doesn't want to hear from him, or because of security concerns, yeah, sure, she displayed her true priorities. She's obviously deeply concerned about her own safety and wants to build a wall around the important people in Washington, D.C., but not a wall at the U.S.-Mexico border to protect the American people, who she seems to kind of detest anyway. And said the author, there are a few political pundits who've pointed out this hypocrisy, and certainly the Republicans are nowhere to be seen. But one of the alternative media that's really risen to the top of the heap is conservative activist and stunt reporter Laura Loomer, who exposed Pelosi's hypocrisy in a humorous, nonviolent, and certainly memorable way, following in the footsteps of the legacy media to not only report the news, but to create it. Together with a film crew, we talked about this last week, but this reprise is kind of interesting, and some illegal aliens she had befriended, she climbed the wall on Pelosi's property in California and immediately discovered by security they were told to leave the premises. Loomer pricelessly responded that Pelosi had said that walls are immoral and that California is a sanctuary state, so she was just taking her hospitality at her word. And when the security guards then asked Loomer to show her ID, she brilliantly replied that according to Pelosi and the Democrat Socialists, IDs are racist. And when the guards then said she was trespassing on private property, she said, "I'm a dreamer. I have every right to be here." And this is where I think he makes the interesting point. Where are the so-called Republicans? Because Loomer and others have now exposed the hollowness of their rhetoric, not to mention the impotence of the Republican Party as well. Why isn't Pelosi rightfully being challenged and ridiculed by the other major political figureheads for her incredible hypocrisy? The only one who does so on a regular basis, he says, is the master troller, the president. I do think Rand Paul gets in his licks. But, says Liberty Nation, that really is a shame because the American people deserve better than Republicans who throw softballs, while the socialists throw dirt, rocks, and, yeah, they're working their way up to it, bullets. Maybe even nukes if Swalwell, the California crat, gets his way. One more bit of news analysis for today. This comes courtesy of the National Sentinel, which says it's now undeniable. Democrats own the government shutdown after refusing the POTUS's DACA deal. The left-wing commentariat, it begins, and their allies in the mainstream media have been blaming the current partial government shutdown for at least a month as a byproduct of the POTUS Donald Trump's temper tantrums over funding for his border wall. But after refusing his pretty darn reasonable and nationally televised compromise on Saturday, the shutdown is now undeniably owned by the Donkey Party. By any measure, what the president offered was not just reasonable, but sensible, and perhaps even a bit much, say some. It combined compassion with common-sense border security initiatives that, at least previously, Democrats fully embraced. In particular, according to the White House website, the president's proposal included the following. Now, this is a list that you won't see very often, so I will go through it. $5.7 billion to fund a steel barrier system, including embedded investments in technology and roads on the southern border, in priority areas cited by the Border Patrol. And that's in addition to the more than 115 miles of barriers already built, replaced, or contracted under President Trump. Number two, $805 million for technology, dogs, a.k.a. canines, and personnel to help stop the flow of illegal drugs, weapons, and other contraband, including $675 million for drug detection inspection technology for ports of entry, and $130 million for canine units, training personnel, and portable scanners to help detect and deter smuggled narcotics, weapons, and other dangerous materials. Also, there's $800 million in humanitarian assistance, medical support, and new temporary housing, $782 million to hire an additional 2,750 border agents, law enforcement officers, and staff, and just over $500 million to support our immigration court system, including hiring 75 new immigration judge teams to reduce the immigration court backlog. Are you sitting down? Currently over 800,000 cases. And POTUS's plan also solved the DACA situation as well, providing for those facing deportation not related to criminal or suspected terrorist activities, giving provisional status to about 700,000 illegal immigrants brought here by their parents at a young age, current DACA recipients, and to certain TPS recipients for three more years, giving an additional 300,000 immigrants whose protected status is facing expiration more certainty as Congress works on a larger immigration deal. But the president, of course, hadn't even finished his speech when it was flatly rejected by the socialists, even when they had previously advocated exactly all of these same things. As the National Sentinel summarizes it, the president's talking about protecting the country and American citizens, while the Democrat position is they could care less what harm comes to both. So, concludes this piece, if all of this doesn't prove just how unhinged the Democrats' left-wing base in the age of Trump derangement syndrome, nothing will. So I close with a quick update from Graham Summers at Phoenix Capital, entitled, "Warning, this market rig is going to end badly." And the current rally's even devolved into a complete farce. Because a rally caused by a fake news story from the Wall Street Journal claiming Trump was considering cutting tariffs on China was debunked as 100% fake news in less than an hour. Yep, I guess whether we're talking rigged elections or rigged markets, these things always tend to end badly. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.